All right, away we go. Hour number two of our radio program coming up for Kentucky Sports Radio in 20 minutes from now. Matt Jones will join us. We'll talk a little Wildcats. We'll also talk about the former coach at Kentucky, now with Pig Suey, and John Calipari as well. So a lot cooking in the basketball world with the Sweet 16 starting back up tomorrow. I don't know about you guys. Today feels like, I know it's a Wednesday. It feels like a Thursday. When I woke up today, I thought it was Thursday, and I thought we were going to get ready for some Sweet 16 basketball. That's not the case. We're still a day away for what I think is going to be an epic Sweet 16 when you look at the matchups. Friday's the monster day compared, you know, out of the two. But you look at the games Thursday, BYU-Alabama, high offensive game. Maryland-Florida, I think there'll be a high-octane offensive game. Duke-Arizona, you got the Caleb Love factor there. Arkansas and Texas Tech, I think that Arkansas is going to win. Like, for tomorrow, I like Arkansas plus 5.5 points. I think that may be my favorite play on the board. And then when we look at Friday, Ole Miss, Michigan State, Sparty's a 3.5 point favorite. I kind of like Ole Miss to win that game, even though I picked Michigan State to go to the Final Four. Kentucky, Tennessee, I think it's going to be a tremendous game. Michigan, Auburn, I do like Auburn to win that one. And then you got Houston and Purdue. So should be a fun one the next 2 days, and then we'll know after this weekend, who's going to be off to the Final Four? And we're going out to the Final Four next week. Wednesday, we're not here with the travel situation and the limited flights. We are going to be off Wednesday. We're using it as a travel day, but we'll have two shows for you from the Final Four next week. Thursday and Friday, we'll have a ton of coaches and guests live from Radio Row in San Antonio. Anyway, though, let's get back to the Cleveland Browns. So a lot in the aftermath of the news last night that Russell Wilson is signing with the Giants when they already signed Jameis Winston. Does this mean that the Giants got a feeling that Shedeur Sanders was going to go too? Or was this just some extra protection and some insurance for the Giants because they didn't want to get shut out if, in fact, they don't know, but maybe Shedeur Sanders does go to the Cleveland Browns? Could the Browns still trade for Kirk Cousins? I guess anything is possible. But here was Myles Garrett on the Cleveland Browns Daily, which is ESPN Cleveland, which is a show on ESPN Cleveland. And Myles Garrett was asked, did a plan at QB factor in his decision to end up taking the cash and staying with the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. No, any team that's going to go far needs a quarterback, and one that's young can learn, is willing to be patient with the process. And as far as quarterbacks, he's laid out a plan on whether it's one from the draft or an older guy. He's kind of laid out something that makes the future look a little bit brighter here, and makes me feel more confident about if someone were to come here, they have some help.
I thought that was a lot of humina, if I'm being honest. I don't think I walk away with a take one way or another that Myles Garrett knows who's going to be the quarterback. And maybe this impacts us more because we had Myles Garrett, not on the phone, not on Zoom, in person, on set on Radio Row. And he made it clear this wasn't about the money. And then he got a bag and then some to stay in Cleveland, and it was all about the money. That's why when he signed it, I said to me, that was all about the money. I don't think the Browns came up with this crazy plan that all of a sudden now Myles Garrett's like, oh, I'm enlightened by what Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski are doing, and that's what I'm saying. This is all about the money, but he said that whatever they told him impacted his decision to stay. Stu, I don't know about you. Whenever you hear Myles Garrett speak now, do you kind of take it with a grain of salt with after what happened with us and then how that did not age the way that Myles Garrett said it was going to age?
I was going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth, kind of. Like, whatever he says, I just can't take seriously. And it's fine. He took the money. Mm-hmm. Good for him. But
yeah,
like,
I have no problem with it.
But come on.
Samter, do you feel the same way when it comes to Myles Garrett?
I'm not on the same boat as either of you guys. I thought that Myles Garrett decided he wanted to stay in Cleveland. He was going to get his bag anywhere. So I don't think it's really going to matter.
Why would he want to stay in Cleveland?
He said he wanted out because he didn't think the team was going to win, and they convinced him otherwise. Whatever they're going to do with quarterback, they convinced him otherwise.
Can I ask a question?
We're going to pair you up with Abdul Carter. Wherever he went, he was getting $40 million a year. He was going to get a huge bag anywhere.
You are Andrew Berry. I am Myles Garrett. You have already offered me the money, let's just say. You start with the money. And then I sit down and I say, Andrew, what's your plan at quarterback before I take this money? What do you think that answer was if you're playing the role of Andrew Berry?
I think Andrew Berry said, we're going to draft a young quarterback but bring in a quality veteran in the meantime, whether it's Kirk Cousins or Dak or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. They were going to bring in a veteran and then draft a guy to learn behind him.
So, in theory, if Myles Garrett was going to get traded, he could have got traded to Philadelphia, could have got traded to the Commanders, he could have got traded to Kansas City, he could have got traded to Buffalo, he could have got traded to Detroit. I think that's one thing we could agree on, Santer. If he was going to get traded, it probably would have been one of those five destinations, right?
Most likely, but you never know. It's the NFL. Anything can happen.
But okay, fine. But we have some sort of an agreement in that ballpark. So with what you just said, a veteran could be Kirk Cousins, could be Kenny Pickett for all we know. Or
if he decided to stay for Kenny Pickett, then I think that we have to get his head checked.
All right, so I'll meet you on Kirk Cousins. And we can maybe draft a young quarterback in the draft, Shedeur Sanders.
I'm not even saying have to draft a guy number two. Maybe they go second round with Jackson Dart or Jalen
Milroe. That's even worse.
No, but I'm saying...
You're not helping yourself out here in this argument.
My point is not that they are going to bank their future right now on the quarterback. My point is that whatever they told him was convincing enough that they have a plan moving forward, whether it's a two-year plan or a four-year plan, that he felt comfortable. And I think that had to do with which veteran and which rookie they were going to draft.
I'll tell you what the convincing was. How many zeros on that offer that you just said to me? Oh, yeah.
Okay. I disagree. He was going to get that money anywhere he went. Maybe he gets like $1 million less a year. It's not going to make a difference.
He's
still
going to be the highest
paid player of all time.
I don't know if he would have got that total value of the contract anywhere. Maybe the per year, but you look at a place like Philadelphia, you look at a place like Buffalo, Detroit, with how much money Kansas City that's already shelled out, he would have probably got close to $40 million a year. I don't know if the years would have been, though, that great that he got from Cleveland. But anyway, to your point was the plans either Kirk Cousins or Shedeur Sanders or Kirk Cousins and then a quarterback in the second round. If I'm Myles Garrett, I'm sitting there saying, I could probably get in the right realm of the salary, and I could have gone to D.C. with Jaden Daniels. I could have gone to Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts and play next to Jalen Carter. I could have gone to Buffalo and get paired up with Josh Allen. I could have gone to Detroit. Yeah, Jared Goff's not great, but Jared Goff would be the best quarterback that the Browns have had in a while. It's like all those other options. Kansas City obviously goes without being said. You have Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones. But all those other options, I don't think whatever this plan is that the Browns have, which I don't even know if the Browns have a plan, to be clear, would really get me excited if I'm Myles Garrett. I think this is as clear could be. I think this is the clearest I've ever seen something. The fact that Myles Garrett is in Cleveland is about one thing and one thing only, and it's about the money. It's like Jerry Maguire with Rod Tidwell in that movie. Show me the money, Jerry. Show me the money. Just replace Jerry with Andrew. Show me the money, Andrew. Or maybe just go Barry. Show me the money, Barry. Show me the money, Barry. And Andrew Barry said, okay, here's the cash and then some. Now, there's a host, Bruce Drennan, I believe is how you say his name. Bonus Time is the name of his podcast. And I saw our pal RJ Choppy did some investigative research on Bruce. Because I'm going to be honest, I have never heard this name before today. Now, that's not me being like a national douche. There's just some times when you don't hear a name. You can't be familiar with everybody. Doesn't mean that the information is not right. But RJ Choppy did some research, and he said he talked to some people in Cleveland, and they said this is not some guy just looking for clicks, and he's a hot take artist, you know, hack. So I wanted to be fair to Bruce, even though I'm about to shred the report, and while I don't think the report's going to happen, that's at least, like, I'm not totally dismissing it just because I've never heard of who the guy was. There's people that have obviously not heard of me. It doesn't mean that my information has been wrong. I'm not a newsbreaker. We make a lot of news. Like, we have people on that make a lot of news. I don't consider myself an insider, but when I break news, it's right because I have people that are in the know that will go out of their way to contact me with specific things that I have relationships with. So there are some stories that I get that don't get refuted. Like, for example, I had a story about Aaron Rodgers blowing off Matt LaFleur for meetings because Matt LaFleur wanted to give him more intel, and that thing went everywhere, and you never heard Aaron Rodgers or Gutekunst or LaFleur or Murphy or whoever ever refute that story because it was factual. Like, there's times I get information like, oh, this guy's going to be the college football coach somewhere, or, you know, watch out for this player in free agency. So I think, like, an insider that has credibility, like a Schefter, a Rappaport, Pelissero, those guys never get questioned, nor should they be. But when you're someone that not regularly breaks news, and there's a difference in making news and breaking news. Like, we make news on this show a ton because we get people on that speak publicly and speak openly. But then there's times where I get sources and I'll get response, or why should we believe you? Because I just don't go out of my way to say things for clicks or say things just to go viral on social media. But anyway, not saying Bruce did this, but Bruce has thrown out this report, Dak Prescott potentially to the Cleveland Browns.
Get ready for this one. I got a pretty darn good source within the Browns organization. Couple. I heard since our last show that part of the reason Myles Garrett was so willing to sign this extension for contract, yeah, money, money, money. The Browns are negotiating as we speak with the Dallas Cowboys for a trade for Dak Prescott. And Garrett got all giddy about it. Why, I don't know. We're not going anywhere with Prescott, even if they pull it off. Newsom's part of it, and draft picks.
I kind of like this guy's voice. I feel like I'm listening to like an older grandpa that had a few pops, and then he all of a sudden is just ranting and raving. I could listen to whatever his show is.
Almost like an older Scott Farrell, maybe. Got the, yeah, a little bit of the raspiness.
And maybe not as many drugs as probably Scott did back in the day, if we're just being honest. Because he sounds, and I love Scott. Scott's my favorite person to in the history of this company. Scott Farrell in this network is my favorite person. Favorite person. But he doesn't sound as zany as Scott Farrell is.
You mean third behind me and Stu?
Oh, no, sorry. Farrell's in front of both of you guys. If I'm just being honest. But anyway, there's a lot there. Let me just say this. If you're Myles Garrett and Andrew Berry says, I think we're going to get Dak Prescott, let's just play along with this game. Does that make you stay in Cleveland still?
No, because I could play with Josh Allen or Jaden Daniels or Jalen Hurts. No.
I agree. Samter, would Dak Prescott make you stay in Cleveland if you are one Myles Garrett?
If I wanted to stay in Cleveland but just needed to find a reason that I believe that they could win, then yes.
You could talk yourself into it.
Yeah, like if I liked living in Cleveland, I bought a home, I have roots in the community, I feel comfortable in this place, I don't want to move to somewhere new, I don't want to uproot my family and my life, and I'm looking for a reason to stay in Cleveland, yeah, Dak is enough.
Yeah, I'd be like, that's enough for me, dog. I'd pull Randy Jackson back in the day on American Idol, if I'm just being serious. So Nick Harris does a great job covering the Cowboys. And he responded to this tweet. And he said, I really wish people would do a lick of research when they hear things like this. There are a million reasons why this would never work for both sides. And these are the reasons that Nick lists. Dallas would take on a nine-figure dead cap hit, 2025, $98 million in 2026, and $61 million in 2027. Dak also has a no-trade clause. That's a big part of it. Why the heck would Dak accept a trade to Cleveland? The Browns would have over $432 million dedicated to just the QB position over the next four seasons. Don't make me count to a million. I definitely could, is what he ended up saying after that. I don't think this is happening. Now, if you want to have fun with this, I could see why the Cowboys would do it, because the Cowboys run their organization based off drama. You'd be getting Shedeur Sanders. Schottenheimer, before even coaching a game, would be on the hot seat because everyone would be like, oh, they get the second overall pick, they take Shedeur, and then boom, Coach Prime will be there within a year or two. And for Cleveland, you're getting at least a competent quarterback, which you have not had since Baker Mayfield, but then even then, the way Baker Mayfield is viewed today wasn't how he was viewed back then in Cleveland. With how the money is, though, I just don't see how this is going to happen. And it would be a big drama move, but I don't believe this is going to happen for an absolute second. Do you believe this has any chance of happening still?
Less than 2%. Okay. No, very little chance.
Yeah, I would say less than 5%, so 2% works for me. Samter, You love a crazy theory.
No. I think based on the logistics, 100%, there's no way that this is reasonable. Maybe they find a way to make it work, but like the Cowboys would basically be giving up on the season because unless they use the second pick and they draft a young quarterback.
No, they'd be making this deal to get Shador.
Yeah, so you're making the deal to get Shador, and then maybe that means you get Deion down the road. You know, you have Schottenheimer for 1 year, and then Deion comes in next year. That could be part of it, long-term plan. And then you, listen, yeah, you have all the dead cap money for Dak, but you also have a rookie quarterback on a rookie deal. I wonder if that impacts how they're going to be able to pay Micah Parsons. But still, there's a way, but logistically it sounds almost impossible.
I think, you know what, Stu? I'll say it. There's a 0% chance of this happening. There's actually maybe a negative 50% chance that this ends up happening. I just don't see it. So, fun report, fun to talk about, but I just don't see this coming to fruition, at least this offseason. All right, Matt Jones will join us next from Kentucky Sports Radio. This is the Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. We're gearing up for March Madness with Sweet 16 action getting underway tomorrow evening. Once again, the schedule tomorrow will be BYU, Alabama, Maryland, Florida, Arizona, Duke, Arkansas, and Texas. And then on Friday, you have Ole Miss, Michigan State, Kentucky, Tennessee, Michigan, Auburn, Purdue, and Houston. It'll be fascinating to see if any of these number one seeds go down. Florida got a little bit of a scare up against UConn, then they found a way to pull out the game in the final few minutes. We'll see what happens with Houston and Purdue. You clearly obviously also have Duke as a number one seed, and then Auburn is obviously the number one overall seed, which I was very impressed with Auburn's performance up against Creighton and the job that they were able to do, because I thought that was going to be a very tough game for Auburn. So we'll see who's going to be the first number one seed to fall. But you look at this tournament right now, there's only one double-digit seed remaining, and it's not a traditional double-digit seed because it's Arkansas. And when you have Arkansas with John Calipari, that has a different feel, and nothing against Texas Tech, who has been the better team this season, even though they play in the Big 12 and Arkansas is in the SEC, and we know 14 teams got into the tournament this year from the SEC. You know, I do think a lot of people will pick Arkansas to beat Texas Tech, but it's kind of crazy with how this has all gone down, where you had that decision by Eric Musselman once Andy Enfield did go to SMU. You had Musselman go to USC, and then Calipari bolted Kentucky to go to Arkansas because it was time to leave Kentucky. And then Mark Pope finds his way back home to Lexington. And the next thing you know, Kevin Young is at BYU. To have all three of those teams with those coaches in year one in the Sweet 16 is pretty remarkable. But let's connect for a few minutes with Matt Jones. Does a great job. Kentucky Sports Radio, as the Wildcats are back in the Sweet 16. They will be in action on Friday evening at 7:39, a very prompt start of 7:39 p.m. Eastern time up against Tennessee, as they'll try to beat the Volunteers for the third time this season and punch their ticket to the Elite Eight. Matt, appreciate the time as always. How you been?
I am doing amazing, and if you show up at 7:38 expecting basketball, you're going to be sadly disappointed, Zach. We start promptly in Indianapolis.
So let me start you off, first off, with what happened over the weekend. Clearly, everyone thought they were going to beat Troy. I didn't know what to expect with Illinois. Underwood always has a good program. Casper there is a very good player, probably going to be a top 10 pick in the draft. Just how about that impressive, dominant performance that we saw from the Wildcats? What was a big moment on the national stage for Mark Pope?
Well, first of all, you're a lot more confident than me if you knew they were going to beat Troy. I watched them lose to St. Peter's and Oakland in two of the last 3 years. So, new coach. I thought the Troy win was important just to get that kind of monkey off their back. And then Illinois, I expected Illinois to give Kentucky more problems than they did. Kentucky's defense was probably the best it has been all season. Kasparis, the top 10 guy you were talking about, never really was able to get started. Probably more importantly, Will Riley, who might also be a first-round pick, he only made one basket. So I thought Kentucky played really well, and it was important they win. I mean, you mentioned Arkansas with Cal had made it, BYU where Pope had been had made it. So I think it was big for Kentucky and for Mark Pope to get the win. And now they play a Tennessee team that they've already played twice this year, beat them both times, but Tennessee played really terribly both games, and I'm not sure that that's going to happen a third time, so I think it's going to be a tough game.
If Kentucky loses to Tennessee, and let's say it's a respectable game and they lose by like a three at the buzzer, how do you think people will look back at year one of the Mark Pope era?
I don't even think it has to be a three at the buzzer. I mean, Kentucky fans all consider this a massive success. I mean, you have to remember, John Calipari had not gotten out of the second round since 2019. Going into this season, since COVID, Kentucky had one NCAA tournament win, and more importantly, and just as important, one SEC tournament win. I mean, they had been awful. And basically, Cal had really made the entire fan base mad with a lot of things that are beyond like what we want to get into. But he just, like, fans were done with him. So while Cal having some success at Arkansas, they were bad most of the year, but they did turn it around. While that, I understand the comparison, the reality is Kentucky was done with Cal.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, this was a new team, new guys. I mean, they have players playing from Drexel, Fairleigh Dickinson, you know, Oklahoma, San Diego State. This was not a murderer's row. So I think a lot of Kentucky fans went into the season going, let's just make the tournament. So getting to the Sweet 16, having a really good year throughout the year. They were good all season. I think this is a success, even if they lose to Tennessee. Now, Tennessee is their rival. You don't want to lose to a rival. But if there was ever a time I think fans could get over it, it's this time.
What has impressed you the most this year? Because obviously everyone's rooting for Mark Pope, right? He's one of their own. He's a very nice guy. You know, is what coaching should be like in the year of 2025. But seeing it in person for a year with how plugged in you are, what has really impressed you the most or surprised you with Mark Pope?
Great offensive mind. I mean, the offense they run, he basically runs an NBA offense, you know, like a Golden State Warriors kind of offense in college. Lots of, lots of zoom action. They got a ton of, like, what they call Peja cuts. Guys like with the pick and pop. I mean, they're playing an NBA offense in the modern sense, and they do it with great shooters. I mean, when you watch the game, when you watch it Thursday night, Kentucky runs their offense through the center at the top of the key, which is something like you see Jokic do and Draymond, but there are not a lot of guys that can do it. Amari Williams basically runs the offense from the top of the key, and I think it's been really impressive. Look, Calipari was a master motivator, great recruiter. But I don't think it's insane to say his offense is a little behind the times. So watching guys run this kind of offense at the college level has been really impressive. Now, defensively, they got work to do. But offensively, this has been a top 10 offense all year, and it's been really fun to watch.
What's the feel right now with Kentucky fans? I know it's tough to get an entire pulse on it, but if you had to say the majority of Kentucky fans, how they view John Calipari right now is what, Matt Jones?
A guy who did a lot of successful things here, but stayed 4 years too long, right? I think, you know, Cal, when he first got here, said this is a 10-year job, and I think he proved that correct because he had an amazing 10 years. And then the last 5 years stunk. And I think that that's just the truth. This is a hard job. It weighs on people. There's a lot that goes into it. And I think he kind of just wore out his welcome. With that said, I don't think Kentucky fans hate him. Like, I think that's kind of a misnomer nationally. I think they were ready for it to end. The moment he's done at Arkansas, I think fans will be willing to embrace him again. But it was time, and because it was time, I think it was best for both parties that they separate.
Yeah, and it ended up working out for both parties, right? I thought it was time for Cal to reset and also Kentucky to reset, and now they're both in the Sweet 16, and then you also have BYU in the Sweet 16. I think it's actually a rare moment in sports where we're always focused on winners and losers, and one team's got to win, and they got to do so emphatically. Like, everyone kind of won here.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I knew BYU would win because they got the guy from the Suns who brought a huge NIL donor. I mean, they're going to have as much money as anybody in the country for NIL. They're going to be great. Arkansas, I didn't know because Cal started so poorly and he looked miserable. The team looked miserable. But you know that he walked into Rupp Arena, got that win. It turned their season around. So that really worked for them. And then Pope was exactly what this fan base needed. I think Kentucky's going to kill it in the portal. I think what you're seeing, Zach, is in college basketball, there's a lot of different ways to win now. Used to be basically you either won with one and dones or a four-year team, and that's it. Now you can win through the portal. You can win with freshmen like Duke did. You can do with a combination like Purdue, all guys that come from the same system. You can do like Houston and go find the toughest dudes in the world and wait till they're 24 and then beat people up. Like, there's a lot of different ways to win, and I actually think I have the controversial view that the portal and NIL has made college basketball a much better sport. Now, football, that's a little different for a variety of reasons. But I think in basketball, the sport is much more entertaining, and the quality of play is much higher because of the portal and NIL, and I think it's actually kind of rejuvenated college basketball.
And I don't think, like, one tournament defines what the future years are going to be like. Like, I see people saying, oh, the Cinderella's dead. You know, a Cinderella could pop back up next year. I just think we've been spoiled since 2018 with two number one seeds going down. I think you had three number two seeds going down. Like, those things are anomalies. Those things aren't supposed to happen. And also, with only one double-digit seed remaining, and you kind of even saw it in the round of 32 how much better the games were, and with that that double-digit seed being Arkansas with Calipari, I think we're going to get a sensational final 2 weeks of the college basketball season.
I agree. Look, people made way too big of conclusions, and it's all people, Zach, who don't watch college basketball, like Stephen A. Smith going, oh, it's, you know, like, stop it. Let's remember that until 2018, a number one seed had never lost, and then two of them lost in 4 years. That was not normal, right? All these 15s beating twos, that was not normal. It was a unique situation. This is a little more chalky than normal, but not crazy. This has happened before, so I don't think it's insane. Here's what's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to have a mid-major program like Butler was 15 years ago that's good every year. That's going to be hard. But in a given year, there are still going to be mid-majors that win. If you watch McNeese, they dominated Clemson in that game. But the reality is the tournament is great if you have upsets on day one and two. But then in the Sweet 16, you want the big boys playing. The games are better that way. You need Duke. You need Kentucky. You need Kansas is out. But you need teams like that. They have it this year. I look at all eight of those matchups, and I think every single one of them is going to be a good game. And that is very, very rare. And I think you have a chance to have a Final Four with four powerhouse teams. And I think that makes it, again, I think it's better for the sport.
Who do you think ultimately gets to the Final Four? Just wondering.
I'm kind of a believer in all the one seeds. I know it's chalk, but this year, more than any year I can remember, I think the one seeds are better than everybody else. I think Florida wins the West relatively easily. Auburn is, you know, Michigan State can get them, but I'll still take Auburn. I think Houston's the best team in Kentucky's bracket. I think Alabama's going to give Duke all they want if they get there. I think Alabama can put up huge points, but in the end, I think it'll be the one. And I think Duke and Florida probably play for the championship, and I'm going to take Florida to win.
So I had Chris Beard on yesterday, wrapping up with Matt Jones, and right, it gives a typical coach answer like, oh, we're just getting started at Ole Miss. I'm not expecting him to say that he's going to stay there forever, but they're just getting started. That was the way when we talked about his future. You look at Nate Oates at Alabama, who's done a remarkable job, and in 2 years, Chris Beard's done a remarkable job at Ole Miss. You covering the SEC as religiously as you do, how do you kind of handicap those two guys staying at their current schools and how long you think?
Nate Oates will stay. A lot of money, a lot of NIL. I think he could have sniffed the Kentucky job if he wanted it, and it just he's going to stay. Now, Chris Beard's a little different. Ole Miss doesn't have the NIL resources of a lot of these other schools, so I could see him leaving for the right job one day. But here's the thing, man. The SEC is where it is in basketball right now. I mean, these coaches, in 2015, when Kentucky went 38-1, the league besides Kentucky sucked. And now this league, I mean, 14 teams made it. And you know what? 14 teams deserved it. And South Carolina was the worst team in the conference, and they beat Clemson earlier this year. This league is where it is. And this is more complicated than this show. But I think the SEC has replaced the ACC as the basketball league, and I think this is going to happen year after year The SEC and the Big Ten are going to dominate the sport.
Then the last thing I'll ask you, how about in football? Because, right, we all know SEC and Big Ten are the two preeminent conferences. The Big Ten has won the last two national championships. Does the Big Ten have the SEC's number right now when it comes to football slightly?
Only at the top. I mean, look, Ohio State and Michigan are, to me, SEC schools in the Big Ten. They have SEC speed. They have SEC talent. You know, Penn State is kind of close to that. But the difference between the SEC and the Big Ten is you get down to, like, Minnesota, Rutgers, and those teams in the SEC, they stink. They're in the Big Ten. In the SEC, Kentucky beat Ole Miss and play Georgia to the final moment.
And Vandy Oklahoma's now, like, one of those stinker schools, too, which is crazy.
Exactly. Like, the difference between the SEC and the Big Ten is not at the top. At the top, they're both about the same. The difference is in the middle and at the bottom. And if the SEC middle and bottom would crush the Big Ten. So the Big Ten, yes, at the top, just as good. It's the rest of the conference where the league is shows its strength, in my opinion.
By the way, last thing I'll bring up to you, good FaceTime for you. You know, Mark Pope came on this show, and he's like, oh, I love your intro music, the best intro music in radio. And then I'm watching the game the other day. He's running off the court. He's dapping you up after a big victory.
Yeah, well, you know, listen, for John Calipari at the end, thought I was the devil, so it was nice. It's nice to have a coach that thinks a little bit differently. But Mark's a great dude, and I think he's going to do a great job here. My view is, put all else aside, give me people who are smart. And Mark Pope's one of the smartest people I've been around in sports.
One of the best of the business, Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio. Matt, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
All righty, there's Matt Jones. Great stuff there. Awesome spot. We'll come on back. We're talking to Aaron Rodgers. He's down to two options. We'll get into those next. Update time first. Here's Ack. Uber Eats is delivering game day deals from hundreds of your local favorites all week. Order now on Uber Eats. Product availability varies by region. See app for details. So in the aftermath of Russell Wilson, we're now sitting there. And this is also the other dynamic of it. So Russ goes to the Giants. They already have Jameis Winston. I thought when they signed Jameis Winston, they were really going to be out on Aaron Rodgers. I think that was their insurance. Now they have double insurance. And I think this insurance isn't now for Aaron Rodgers if he doesn't go there, because I think they have come to grips in reality that Aaron's probably going to Pittsburgh or he's going to retire. But this to me is draft insurance by the Giants. Like, okay, we're sitting at three. We could maybe try to trade up to one. If Tennessee says it's not rich enough for us, it's not as robust of a return as we thought it was going to be, then you know what? We will stay at three. Cleveland, could they maybe do a 2-3 deal potentially? But if it goes quarterbacks 1-2 in terms of Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders of the Giants or SOL, then I really don't think there's much of a future for Joe Shane and Brian Daboll in New York. Like, if you're telling me of Russ, Malik Nabers, and Tyrone Tracy Jr., do I think you're doing that much better than what you were last year? Probably not. So, with that being said, I think the Giants getting Russ, because you got to at least go down swinging, is a competent body in there and someone that they could at least feel can give them a chance, even though I don't think it will work out. And they're still optimistic that maybe they get a long-term guy in the draft. But you look at the aftermath of this Russell Wilson signing, it's like Aaron Rodgers, you've visited the Steelers. You said you're interested in the Giants. We all know you really, or the reporting says he's interested in the Giants. We all know he really wants to go to Minnesota, but Minnesota's not interested in him. So I'm going to just ask this question. How much longer is this going to take? Seriously. Like, Aaron, what are we doing here? Do you want to play or do you not? And we know you want to play. Are you going to continue to hold out hope? And is your ego that big? Yes. Well, you're going to think Minnesota's eventually going to come around? Or are you going to be what you should do and just say, all right, Pittsburgh, I'm coming. Let's go. Because it's not like there's some great mystery here. There are three doors right now. We know what's behind the three doors. There's no mystery door here. Behind door A is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Behind door B is retirement. And behind door C, you think is the Minnesota Vikings, but that door ain't opening for you right now. You have the key. You got the, well, it's not the golden ticket, but you get the point. You have the key to unlock the door in Pittsburgh. So why not just unlock it? I don't think you're retiring. I don't. And I don't think Minnesota, barring a J.J. McCarthy injury, is swooping on in and saying, you know what, we'll play, we'll have you play for us, Aaron. I don't think that's going to happen. So I opened up the show today saying I have NFL draft fatigue, and I love the draft, right? Like, the NFL draft was one of my favorite events on the calendar. But I have fatigue in trying to figure out who the second and third overall pick is, because my answer changes every day because there's different news that makes you think differently. And I always say this. I don't believe anything that I read this time of the year, but there's moves that are made that makes you just think differently here. And I don't know what the Giants think they know, and I don't know what the Browns think they know. But what I think is that Cam Ward's going to be the number one overall pick to Tennessee. What I think is the Browns should, emphasis the word should, draft Shedeur Sanders. But I don't think they will. Right now, man, right now I think they will. But I'm not certain that they will. That answer yesterday was they wouldn't. Today, I think they will. Tomorrow could be they wouldn't. And the Giants, if Shedeur is there, I think you have to take him. But I don't know if that's the case anymore. So this is a giant cluster. And if you think I'm confused and I've reached fatigue with the two and the three and I just want the draft, if I could just move time up and say, hey, it's April 24th tomorrow, oh, I would be happy. I'd be relieved. Because we wouldn't have to sit here anymore and have one news item like Russell Wilson, which is the grand scheme of things, does not move the needle for me. But it does change the way that you maybe think about the draft. Because there's a lot of ambiguity on what it means for the draft. And there's a lot of, ooh, does this mean this? Does this mean that? Does this mean this? Does this mean that? But if you think my fatigue has already been reached on the apex there, I don't even know how to then describe what my fatigue is with Aaron Rodgers. Like, dude, you are an all-time great quarterback. You're not Brady. You are not Patrick Mahomes. You're not Joe Montana. You're not Peyton Manning, right? Not in that level. But you're, in all likelihood, a top 10 quarterback of all time. Some may say top 15. I'll go top 10. But you're, like, somewhere between 7 to 10. I think that's a fair range. And you won a Super Bowl so early in your career. I know you won so many MVPs, but you never got back to another Super Bowl and you never won another Super Bowl. You're phenomenal. First ballot Hall of Famer. But the last few years, the juice hasn't been worth the squeeze. At the end in Green Bay, last year, juice wasn't worth the squeeze. Then, first year in New York, unfortunately, your Achilles blows out. Last year, slow start. At the end, you played well. Juice wasn't worth the squeeze. And now, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers really going to his fourth season from the last really good or great season that he's had. That's a long time. The trajectory at that rate at his age when he's 41 and turns 42 in December does not say that he's going to have a monstrous season this year. But that last great season he had was 37 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. That was 2021. We're talking 2022, 2023, 2024. You're now going into that fourth season. So for the last 3 years, one, you missed the entirety of it. The other two were fine. They weren't great. They weren't very good. They weren't horrendous. They were fine. You're better than fine. And not everyone is Tom Brady that plays into his mid-40s at an elite level. That's an anomaly. That's like a 16 beating a 1. Don't get used to that. Because your career can end very quickly. Now, is he still able to go in and produce? Yes. Can he go to Pittsburgh? And can he go win a playoff game there? I think that's the limit. I think that's the ceiling. I think it's possible. But is it worth the weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of drama? I don't think so. And I just want this to end already. Like, if we... I don't even want to think about this. Do you think Aaron Rodgers will be signed 4 Wednesdays from now? So 4 Wednesdays from now puts us the day before the NFL draft. Stu, does Aaron Rodgers make a decision by 4 Wednesdays from now?
I think he does. Samter? I hope he does.
I hope. Please. I hope he makes it by next Wednesday. Does Aaron Rodgers make a decision by April 23rd?
100%. Assuming the Steelers are the only team left, I'm sure they have to tell him, hey, we need an answer before the draft.
But where are the Steelers going? Because that's the thing with Russell Wilson. Now, he's off the market. Justin Fields is off the market. It's like, where else are you going? You're going to really start the year with Mason Rudolph? It's like the Steelers don't have that much leverage either anymore.
I mean, listen, it could be a situation where if Shador falls to 6-7, maybe they try to move up. Maybe Jackson Dart there, 21 for the Steelers. So at least they have to have an idea of who they're going to have in their QB room.
Yeah. I hope so. I really hope so. Stu said it best. I hope so. I can't confidently say, though, that they will. Let's pick a date on the calendar. Let's do a Rodgers pool. When does Aaron Rodgers sign by? All righty. Do 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 bump ba dum bump 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 bump. Samter, what's the date?
Now, I know you just did Jeopardy music. Are we going Price is Right rules, where if I say a date later than when he signs, I lose automatically?
Just give me the date. We'll do whoever's closest to it.
It's going to be next week. I'm going to say Tuesday the 1st.
Oh, on April Fool's Day.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to do it intentionally. That's a good point. April Fool's. That solidifies my pick. April Fool's.
Stu?
April 8th, a week from then.
April 8th. I think that's going to be too early. I'm going to go April 17th. I'm taking April 17th, which means we will have 3 more weeks of Rodgers watch. Make a decision, bro. All right. Ryan Hot Take Kiki will join us in studio next. And also, I will unleash and reveal the Shador Sanders pie chart.